Welcome to the Brain People Podcast, a show where four mental health experts team up to bring you practical tools for overcoming mental health challenges. The Brain People don't replace your doctor or therapist, but we will give you some extra tools to help you on your journey. So join us as we fight mental illness, one episode at a time.
Welcome to the Brain People Podcast. My name is Dr. Katie Cruz. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, and joining me is
Dr. Daniel Bynes, and I'm a psychiatrist.
And we might be in similar outfits and we might be talking about something similar because this is a part two to our part one on choose life. And for part one, we won't go into it, but just a quick review. We talked about choose, and then today we'll be focusing on life. So why don't we just start with life? L stands for?
Light.
Okay. Why is light important for us and our mental health?
There's a lot to be said about light, like there is about all of these topics. But we were meant to be creatures or people, if you will, of the light. And meaning if we're exposed to light on a regular basis, particularly sunlight, research shows there is great benefit to our mental and our physical health. A very common thing that I see, even though we're in California and there's more sun here than a lot of places around the world, still in the winter times, and we get some rainy days and whatnot up here in Northern California, people can start to get seasonal affective disorder, which is a term, basically seasonal depression or the winter blues. And it's really basically related to a lack of light that can, for many people, induce depressive symptoms.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you were talking, it reminded me of during COVID, right? You can see both the impact of connection, which we talked about in last episode, and then light. People were trapped indoors, and you could see that mood disorders, depression, anxiety, especially, the rates really increased. And so we see this impact on light and the importance of our body, not just physically, where we talk about vitamin D and so forth, but mentally and our mood.
Absolutely, yeah. And speaking of the vitamin D element, so light, exposure to outdoor light will help our bodies to make vitamin D. And that even though, yes, it's extremely important for calcium balance and physical health, they also have found specifically that it does help cognitively and emotionally with your health as well. And so the vitamin D element from the sun is also extremely important. But so is just light in that it helps to set that, which kind of goes along with our next letter, internal clock. It helps to set our circadian rhythm and basically helps us to realize when we should be awake and when we should be sleeping. And so when we get exposed to that light, particularly in the morning, this helps to put our minds and our bodies in sync with the day. And that exposure to the sun has been shown to increase serotonin levels in the brain as well. And so there's that circadian rhythm element, and it also exposure helps to shut down the melatonin secretion, because melatonin is essentially secreted when it's dark out, and it makes us feel kind of groggy and foggy and all of this. When we're exposed to that light in the morning, that shuts down that melatonin secretion in our bodies and our brains, and it wakes us up. And then plus, like I said, it helps to enhance the serotonin availability in the brain, and that improves mood significantly.
Now, what would you say for somebody who lives in a place or even during certain seasons where whether in the morning the sun rises late or they have only a few hours of light, what do they do to improve their mood if they don't have the physical sun bright and shining outside?
Yeah, so I encourage a lot of my patients, especially if they're prone to the seasonal mood disorder, to get a light box. And so getting a light box, you can either get a blue light because it's the right wavelength to shut down that melatonin secretion, or you can do the full spectrum bright white light. And with that one, you want anywhere from 7,000 to 10,000 lux of the bright white light. And you do at least 20 minutes, so 20 to 30 minutes every morning. Mm-hmm. And ideally, to set that circadian rhythm, you want to do it first thing in the morning, so probably around 7 a.m.-ish. And that can really help a lot of people's mood. There's studies that show that bright light therapy is just as effective for a lot of people as antidepressants. Mm. And they've even done studies on bipolar depression, where it's very effective there. The one caveat or thing that people want to watch out for is that because it can be activating, you have to be a little careful to make sure that you're not getting so much bright light that it can throw you into a manic episode. That's very rare, and in the studies, they really didn't see that, but it's just something to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that these are kind of bleeding into each other, internal clock, and you just mentioned blue light in the morning, but I know a lot of people struggle with blue light and other, you know, types of light that can negatively impact their mental health.
That's true. And that's another really good point, because when you get that blue light, which can be emitted from screens, you know, whether it's our phones or computers or televisions, there's a blue light that is emitted. And that blue light will, again, shut down that melatonin, which is good in the morning, right? But in the evening, when we're trying to wind down and go to sleep, it can be a major trigger for insomnia. And so we highly recommend at least an hour, ideally 2 hours of no screen time before bedtime. And sure, you know, most of us know about blue light filters that you can put on your phone or computer or what have you. That does help, but it is difficult to eliminate completely all blue light. Plus, with electronics, there tends to be a stimulation factor beyond just the light, just the blue light, and so that can often contribute to insomnia as well.
So I know we're already there, so might as well say it. Internal clock, the eye to life. So we're talking about the importance of our internal clock.
Yes. And I want to get into that, but I have to say one more thing about light, because it's so exciting. And and that is, you know, it's not just how the light sets that circadian rhythm and even how it increases serotonin availability, et cetera. Another element that is really neat, I think, is the infrared, what infrared light does for us. Because really what we're talking about is the benefit of kind of the blue light, which is more the one end of the light spectrum, the smaller, shorter wavelengths. But now when you talk about the red and the infrared light, which is the other end of the light spectrum, the longer wavelengths, they have found just in recent years tremendous help, both mentally and physically, for individuals. And so basically what infrared light will do for us is it has a more direct contribution to the nervous system. While the shorter wavelength light interacts more with our eyes and our skin, the infrared light will penetrate deeper because it's a longer wavelength, it can literally penetrate deep into our body's tissues and even through our skull into our brain cells. And so what research is showing is that when that infrared light penetrates into the brain, that it interacts directly with some of the enzymes. For example, there's a enzyme in the mitochondria, which the mitochondria are the energy-producing components of our cells. And there's an enzyme there that's called cytochrome C oxidase. Well, that infrared light will directly stimulate cytochrome C oxidase to increase ATP. So it increases the energy production in cells. Also, they find that, and it's probably related to that energy production, it accelerates healing. So what they're doing, and they're often exposing people to infrared light nowadays, that they're finding that it can help even with brain injuries. It can help. They're doing some research even in cognitive decline, Parkinson's, and certainly it seems like there's some benefit for mood disorders as well. And so some people, and I even do the infrared light once in a while myself. I have one at home. I've found that it gives a sense of mental energy and clarity as well. But the good news is you can get the benefit of that just by going outdoors because you'll get infrared light exposure from the sun. And you don't even have to be in direct sun. That's the other neat thing about infrared. You can be in the shade and still get infrared exposure because it reflects off the trees. And you can even, and infrared's different than like the UV in that you don't need that direct skin. It will penetrate through your clothing as well. So you can wear a hat and that sort of thing and still get the benefits.
Yeah, that is exciting.
I couldn't but help. You know, it's so neat. I mean, it's just amazing when you start seeing the depth of the benefits of these different things.
Mm-hmm. And how we were created.
Yeah, exactly. But I know you're asking about internal clock, so I guess we should get to that. Yeah, so internal clock is an interesting one. So that's really circadian rhythm. And when we're talking about that, it's thinking about the fact that human beings do a lot better physically and mentally when we are awake when it's light outside and we're sleeping when it's dark outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would add to that too, which we often forget is our body runs on clocks, but even from a perspective of meal times. I know that's not like a huge component of internal clock, but I know a lot of clients who are like, oh, you know, I'm waking up at this time and I'm going to bed at this time, but their meal times is also throwing off their internal clocks, and especially eating closer to bedtime and so forth. And so I think it's just fascinating that our body is built in a way that's very structured and organized, that it's meant to work in a certain way. Instead of fighting against it, we're working with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think almost downplaying, but the mealtime, those are the two things I tell people is the meal times and the times that we sleep. Those are the two big things for like that internal clock and keeping that structure.
And the light.
In our life. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that light exposure helps to set like that as well. So meal times are extremely important. And what's interesting is that we have this basically, they call it kind of the master clock, which is in our hypothalamus, in our brain, that coordinates, you know, our circadian rhythm, our sense of like when we should be tired and when we should be waking up and when we should feel hungry and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that they've also found that it seems like probably every organ has its own clock. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, the hypothalamus has kind of this master clock, but then our stomach kind of has its own clock too. And our heart has its own clock and our kidneys have their own clock and then the liver. And so it's very interesting how each organ system, each part of our bodies is in sync and tries to work together to really optimize what we're doing. And so this is why it's so important to try to be consistent, you know, with our daily routine as much as possible. So our body knows what to expect and then we can operate a lot more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. I tell my clients, I'm like, you know, let's just put science to the side for a moment, all research, and let's just do some experiments. Right. Like, let's just start going to bed consistently a certain time, right? Or, okay, we'll allow you to go to bed late. Let's keep track of your mood the next day. And they'll often report being more irritable in the morning or more depressed. Even I shared with one of my clients, I said, I've been traveling recently and the travel just, you know, I was 3 hours ahead and then came back and it was late. And I was like, I was feeling very down and feeling very irritable and other things coming to work with stress. And I was like, you can just very simply see the impact of sleep on mood. Like, you don't have to look at any signs, just know for your body.
That's right.
I have some clients who I say, just trust me, you know, let's start this bedtime routine and instantly their mood improves. So we see, and then for bipolar especially, sleep is a huge component to preventing manic episodes.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is huge. And like you said, it's great to look at the science, but you know, when the rubber meets the road, hey, let's look at an N of one. In other words, like that one experimental subject, which is myself, let me try it out. And it does take some time to, you know, apply these principles and see the benefit. But usually after several days of if you're really consistent, you notice huge difference. And you know, when we talk about times of day to sleep, This is a big deal. Of course, we want to do everything we can to optimize our sleep hygiene, and we have, you know, a handout on that we definitely are happy to make accessible to our listeners. But we want to make sure we're getting some sleep before midnight, because what research shows, and our personal experience as well, as Dr. Katie is reminding us, is that when you get that sleep before midnight, it does improve mood. What they found is when people do shift work, you know, when they're working at night and they're trying to sleep during the day, that the incidence of depression and mood disorders is significantly worse. Also, cognitively, people don't do as well. One of the big reasons for that, I believe, is because if you get sleep before midnight, it allows your body to go through this process of getting deeper stage three sleep. And so that's the deep, slow wave sleep. And it's only in stage three, four sleep, that deep wave sleep, that the brain does what I call a deep brain cleaning. And so through that process, you get this fluid that goes between the nerve cells and flushes out toxins and cleans the brain so that now you're ready for a new day.
Yeah, that's great. All right, F.
So yes, F. So F is food. And we only want to choose fantastic food, right? So what do we mean by fantastic food? Oh, what we're talking about there is basically whole food and plant-based food. So, you know, again, I never tell people, oh, you have to be a vegetarian or a vegan, but we want to, as much as possible, eliminate processed foods. That's like my number one rule. Get rid of like the refined, you know, sugar and the refined flours as much as possible. Eat food as close to as the way it's grown and the way it's supposed to be naturally. So get rid of processed food. And then the plant-based piece, again, not saying everyone has to be 100% vegan or vegetarian, but try to minimize any meat or dairy. And for most people, doing kind of a not too abrupt of a change is more is better, because it can be hard if you just are trying to change everything all at once.
And I know there's an episode with Robert Nordman, our colleague, that talks more about how food impacts our mood. And then I just love any of the research that talks about the gut-brain connection, right? They call our gut our second brain because there are neurotransmitters. When I first learned this, I was like, wow, that's so fascinating. Like, we think about neurotransmitters and hormones being here only, but in our gut, and how we what we eat directly impacts how we feel.
It does. It's huge. And you know, one of the big things is that we find when we're eating the foods that aren't so healthy for us, it really triggers a lot of inflammation in our bodies. And a lot of research is showing that the more inflammation we have in our bodies, the more that impacts our brain and sets the stage for problems. But on the other hand, the whole foods are very anti-inflammatory. The plant-based foods are very anti-inflammatory. Plus, they feed the good bacteria in our gut, which allows our second brain to be a lot happier.
I also remember learning for the first time about like our food being able to convert into serotonin in a way that you think, oh, you know, serotonin, I remember in grad school is like very focused on medication, right? Of like, oh, that improves your serotonin levels. But then food can as well. I know that we often recommend a lot of flaxseed, right? Because that's very helpful for that. But there are many foods, and you see a consistent pattern with whole plant-based foods being the ones that really help us with our mood.
That's right. When you start understanding that the like the serotonin and the dopamine and all these other GABA, et cetera, all these neurotransmitters are formulated from building blocks that come from our food, then we can be like, okay, well, which foods have significant quantities of that? And like flaxseed, chia seeds are huge ones. But what we find is if you eat a wide variety of plant-based foods, it will really help to boost those neurotransmitters.
All right. Anything else about food?
No, I think we could say a lot, but let's go on to environment.
This is one that I don't think we often talk about in depth. So
So, you know, I'm not going to go on too long about it, but what I will say is our environment is very important. And a lot of us have heard the saying, by beholding, we become changed. And that is very true. You know, if our environment is messy and in disarray, then that is going to affect us mentally, internally, emotionally. On the other hand, if it's clean, if it's organized, I know if I am trying to work in an environment that is clean and organized, I can think so much more clearly. You know, it just makes it so much better. And often On Fridays, that's my mostly my administrative day. And so I have a lot of meetings. And so I used to struggle with just like staying on track and because I was just sitting there. And so I started walking, which of course the exercise helps. But I think also just being in a natural, beautiful surroundings, being in a beautiful environment helped me to think that much more clearly as well.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're talking about having a clean environment, a lot of people, they talk about like, oh, my house is completely cluttered, my closet, my you know, kitchen. And it can be really difficult to even have a desire to wake up in the morning and, you know, start the day when you know, oh, I'm going into that room and it's, you know, this way. And so it has a mental component to it of just not having that desire, that pep in your step to start your day.
That's right. Yeah, it can be overwhelming and difficult. And so I want to encourage our listeners to, you know, pay attention to the environments that we're putting ourselves into. And if we need help cleaning up our environment, don't shame yourself. Like if your environment has gotten cluttered or it's not, you know, a good situation, but be willing to reach out for some help and just start chipping away at it, you know, and over time it can become better.
Yeah, you see a lot in today, you know, whether online or research or so forth about simplified lives, right? And just trying to simplify your life. And that can also include not having a cluttered, you know, social life or having healthy relationships. And then I know also a big part of environment is our physical environment of toxins and what we breathe. And I know some people are constrained of whether they live in the city or the country, but being intentional also about having a healthy physical environment.
It's very true. Yeah. And that's something that we need to be careful with because there are a lot of toxins that we can get either from the air or from our food or the water sources that we take in. And so we need to be careful of that and aware of those things that we can do to mitigate those risks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about choice, right? As we summarize choose life, there's a big importance in that word choice.
Yeah, you know, knowledge is one thing, and knowledge is important because if we don't have knowledge, then we don't know what would be ideal or better for us and the changes that we need to make. But when we talk about choose life, you know, there is that choice involved, and sometimes we can feel like, yeah, I want to do that, but I don't have the choice power, the willpower to make those changes. And that can be very, very challenging and almost disheartening for us. And I've had some people be like, okay, don't tell me. I don't even want to hear it because then I'm going to know that I should do these things. But I feel like I just don't have the capacity to do that. And I'm just curious, when people say that to you, what do you tell them?
So oftentimes it comes from an all or nothing perspective. So that's the biggest barrier that I see. So they have to think, they think that they have to do it a certain way and do it super well. And I say, you know, success is small steps added up over time. So what are some small steps you can take today? So it's decluttering their home. They have, you know, 100 shoes. We'll start with, you know, a section of your closet and just start with that. And you notice that something is better than nothing. And so when it comes to sleep or any of these health principles, starting with something is better than nothing.
Absolutely. I love that because I think when we can get little victories and realize like, no, I do have some choice power here. That can then give us more confidence to take next steps as well. And one thing I wanted to make our listeners aware of is that this Choose Life acronym was actually based on a Bible text. And I want to share that Bible text with our listeners. It's Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. And it says, I have set before you, and in the context of this is Moses, this is basically his final sermon, his final talk to the children of Israel before he goes and dies. Like he's been with them as their shepherd for 40 years, you know, and his heart is bound up in the children of Israel. And now God has said, hey, this is the end of your journey. You're going to be dying now. And so he gives them this final sermon, and this is like his kind of last call, so to speak. And and at the end, he says, look, I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life that both you and your seed, which means like your children, may live. I love that.
Yeah.
And I think that's so beautiful, because basically, I think when we think about this Choose Life acronym, what we're really, it's a call to action. And it's saying, look, you have choice. We make choices every day. And the choices mm-hmm. that we make will either lead to a greater and greater life, like more full life, a more mm-hmm. abundant life, or lead to decline, to deterioration, and death. And the beautiful thing is, when you look at the principles here that Moses talks about, not just in that verse, but mm-hmm. in the whole of Deuteronomy, is that he emphasizes that we don't have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. That God wants to help us through that process. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about that choice power that we all need to make the right choices, I want to encourage all of our listeners, and this is a reminder to myself too, mm-hmm. we don't have to go at it alone. We have a helper. God wants to help us mm-hmm. through that process. And he's also sent us people in our mm-hmm. journey that will be with us as well and help us. And so when we realize, like, wow, you know, going back to that first letter of Choose Life, the connection piece, that I'm not alone, that I mm-hmm. have help, there's a great joy that can come with change. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I'm empowered to become a better person, but I'm also empowered to connect with God and with people that really do care about mm-hmm. me.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thought. And I think we'll just end with that to encourage our listeners. The way that I was thinking about it is, there's a fork in the road. Every little decision, not these big decisions, if I have to be perfect in my sleep or my connection, but small little decisions every day, right? There's a fork in the road. Do I eat this right now, or do I eat this, right? And thinking about the person that they want to be and that they want overall to choose life, not death, but life. And so we want to encourage our listeners to be able to think and meditate on these different principles and to start implementing small changes added up over time that can result in a wonderful mental health. So if you only take one thing away from today's show, remember this: if mental illness is a whole person problem, then it must have a whole person solution. I'm Dr. Katie Cruz.
And I'm Dr. Daniel Bynes, and you've been listening to
the Brain People Podcast.
Thanks for listening. To hear more episodes, find us on social media, or support us financially, visit thebrainpeoplepodcast.com.